Welcome to the Where Humanity Meets Technology podcast, where we talk to business leaders about cybersecurity, data management, and advanced digital solutions to provide strategies to increase the profitability of your company. Now, here's your host, Maurice Hamilton, the CEO of Infinivate Consulting Services.
Hello, everyone. My name is Maurice Hamilton, and welcome to our podcast that we call Where Humanity Meets Technology, where we like to interview business leaders, business founders, CTOs, CIOs, CSOs, COOs, and different people in different industries to talk about how they are using technology to drive humanity. Today, we have a special guest, and he actually has a lot of experience that we're going to talk about something that really intrigues me, and that's IIoT, and that is Ian Uriarte. I want to make sure I'm saying it right. Ian Uriarte. So Ian, welcome to the podcast. I'm really happy to have you today.
Thank you, Maurice. Appreciate it. Happy to be here.
Thank you. So I have to start my podcast. I always start my podcast and ask the one question. And it's what I call a genesis question. And that I always talk about, how did it all begin? So you and I have pretty similar backgrounds. We've pretty much been in the same industry for a few years now, a few seasons. We've seen the weather change and season change over time. So how did it all begin for you? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I was commenting to you earlier that it all started when I got a gift for Christmas when I was 5 years old. And it was like a helicopter that was controlled from a little remote that, you know, it was like a, you know, basically like a joystick, right, that allow you to get the helicopter up and down and move in speed. But it was tethered by a cable, and it was a very short cable, and it had a little NASA capsule and an astronaut, and it had a hook, and the goal of the game was to rescue the astronaut, you know, that was floating in the sea supposedly, right? And mm-hmm. I was so curious how the helicopter worked, you know, it's electronic, right? And I just remember I just got it, assembled it, was playing in the front porch. And I recall this going through my living room and my parents, my grandparents, everybody was there. And I passed by. And when I came back, I came back with a hammer. And I went, and I don't think that they really pay attention. They probably saw me with a corner of an eye. And then they hear the banging, and I start banging on where the motor was, and I just broke it. And my father came just yelling, like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I want to know how it works." And so that's how it started. I was just curious about how things work. And since then, I think my dad and my mom were buying me these electronic kits and these experimental kits, you know, chemical kits. And so I've been doing that since I was little. I started programming at the age of 15. My dad was a little bit of a gambler. He won a computer in 1981, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was one of those kind of like an Atari type that you connect to your TV. Mm-hmm. And the only thing it took was BASIC, you know, and I learned to program BASIC by myself. And so, you know, electronics and computer programming, that's how it all began. And I went into engineering, electrical engineering and software engineering, you know, after that. And, you know, rest is history.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. You're right. I remember those Atari. You know, as a matter of fact, I had an old Commodore 64.
Yeah, the Commodore 64. Yeah.
Learn how to program in BASIC, run. I forget think of the basic commands, but
yeah.
It's pretty challenging.
Yeah.
So when I look at your company now, and you are the founder and CEO of Timber Grove, and I look at some of the things that you guys do there. Can you tell us a little bit about IIoT and that actually how you guys actually provide additional services and talk a little bit about the industries that you work with and how you guys are driving the drive for technology?
Yes, you know, since my early career days were in the world of data acquisition systems, you know, for oil and gas, and then moving to the control systems, you know, for drilling systems. I remember one of my last big projects in what we call telematics, right? Which is automation via distance automation. And so we were controlling 13 robots, you know, to automate as much as possible the processes related to drilling. So, you know, those days I learned a lot about, you know, deterministic networks, you know, control systems. You know, you're talking about, you know, sub-second response time, milliseconds, you know, talking about under 100 milliseconds, sometimes less, you know, response times for control systems. So in the industrial world, there's a lot of applications that require that, right? Especially on the control side. On the parts of data acquisition, sometimes you don't need the real time, but in industrial environments, it's very common that you need their applications that require real time monitoring. And so when the world of IoT started, kind of the phrase has became a catchphrase, right? In around 2014, 2015, we started doing some implementations of IoT, and we realized that there were some limitations with what you could do in the world of IoT because of, you know, it wasn't meant for real time. And so once you start getting into industrial use cases, you realize you need something a little more more sophisticated than just a regular, you know, device that, you know, calls home. You know, you need something that is going to give you a millisecond response time or at least, you know, in the seconds response time instead of, you know, minutes, you know, or a minute or something like that. So we started working on that type of problems, you know, not only on the OT side, you know, the operational technology, which is, you know, PLCs, is the SCADAs, you know, and the sensor side, but also on the enterprise side, which is also back in the day, it was kind of new, right? So how do you aggregate a bunch of queuing systems and, you know, and then how do you process data in a way that allows you to do some more robust analytics, like time sliding window, you know, type of analytics instead of just, regular statistical, you know, or stochastic processes, you know. And so that's kind of what guided us. You know, we started having some challenges with the current customers. A lot of our customers are kind of industrial settings, you know, transportation and logistics, oil and gas, you know, both for the upstream and downstream, and a lot of the customers in the manufacturing side that require, you know, response times that are, you know, under a second. And so that's how we started looking into the industry, figure out the challenges that you can encounter in IoT and realizing there is a big difference between industrial IoT and regular IoT, you know. So,
okay. So when I think about that, there's other things that you talk about data acquisition, you talk about the time and how, because a lot of companies need that information like instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Are you doing anything like any kind of a sensors or have any kind of measurements for like preventative maintenance so we can keep the cost of that low or in some kind of monitoring so that you mentioned SCADA before. Yep. Is that those are some of the applications that you also apply with those industries?
Yeah, correct. A lot of the most modern applications that we're looking at, and you know, some of the projects that we're involved in, it's associated with predictive and preventive maintenance. A lot has to do with utilizing data that is coming in real time, and then, you know, doing some analytics real time on that data against existing data and patterns that have been already determined by machine learning algorithms, right? And so, and then using machine learning or deep learning to do a prediction, right, about when a machine will go down, what percentage of probability that we have that machine is going to go down, and for how long, right? And so what you do is, you know, you don't want your machines to go down without in an undetermined amount of time. You want to predict when so that you can put them offline before that happens and do the predictive maintenance, or whatever. Instead of having to focus on a repair, you're focusing on actually preventing something from happening, right? Because now you have downtime and you have no control over that downtime. But if you plan the downtime, and you could have another machine that takes over for that machine, and you're not losing on your productivity. But if it happens live, it might be harder to be able to, you know, have a replacement for that machine that is producing for our customers usually revenue, you know, so revenue producing machinery, you know.
Okay. So my next question, I was going to ask you about some of the positives, and you just mentioned some of the positives, and you also just touched a little bit on some of the challenges and some of the things that can go wrong. What would you say will be some of the biggest challenges that companies have out there, not only once they have the device there, but I guess I probably should ask this question first. Do you find that some companies are still reluctant to actually implement this new technology at this, even right now where we are? Because, you know, I mean, you clearly talked about some of the benefits there. Do you see that sometimes it's challenging for just to have a conversation with some of these leaders and say, hey, look, you really need to actually have that?
Yeah, that's a great question. We find that part of the issue is not having clarity on what the value, and we're talking about value, you know, understanding numerically what the ROI of an investment for IoT would be. It requires some, you know, some homework, right? Because you got to understand, first of all, where are you losing money or where you think you will lose money? Then it will require understanding how much an implementation will cost. And those numbers are not readily available. I mean, IoT, for all the hype that has been for the last 7-8 years, there's still not enough data out there, especially in the industrial world, you know, on what it will take to implement things. A lot of projects fail at the stages of proof of concept or end at the proof of concept without delivering, you know, going further, right? A lot has to do with, you know, it's usually, you know, very expensive firms have been doing this, right? I mean, you're talking about some of the majors, right? And those are usually not tiny projects. And so I think part of it is do they have enough data to do an analysis on what ROI would be, you know? And so when we sit down with customers, it's a lot of education and trying to, first of all, understand how much pain they have, because if there's not enough pain, there is no education that will help them, you know, invest into this, right? You have to have a pain that is so big that it will move them to action. You know, recently we had a major company come to us with a problem associated with tracking tools, and they were losing, you know, tens of millions of dollars on these devices, and it's something that can definitely be fixed through, you know, industrial IoT. A lot of these problems come associated. It's not just technologies, processes, people, we know, right? I mean, you can just throw technology at something, but also is how do you get those numbers, right? And so, you know, you as an agency that we are, you know, we try to figure out, we spend a long time upfront with a client trying to estimate what this will look like in terms of return of investment. So first of all, how much it will cost, right, to implement something like this. And there's a lot of variables. So you have to compartmentalize this into, you know, parts of the solution. And once you do that and able to say, this area of the project will solve this particular problem, if you have enough data about what the cost, you know, of that problem is, then you can have an ROI, right? And so, but it's a lot of conversations. You have to have those are very real conversations that have to, there has to be trust in both ends, right? The customer has to believe that by giving us those numbers, we're, you know, we're just taking that to be able to come up with a solution that will get value. And so I think that's the key, right? Is having a trusted advisor that can work with you, that knows, you know, how to implement these solutions. That's been a big issue for most of the customers. And then in the end, it's, you know, do they have enough data to even figure out how to go about, you know, implementing this? Because, you know, without ROI, most companies, they don't want to invest. And so that's been probably the biggest deterrent of, you know, industrial IoT taking, you know, over, like, you know, it's been predicted for the last, you know, 7-8 years, you know.
Interesting point. And so Ian, when you guys do it, are you actually using their current software applications, or do you have to actually kind of like you mentioned PLC and everything, do you have to customize the applications that's going to work with their device?
No, we have multiple ways to approach this, right? It depends on things like security, right? Which we, you know a lot about that, Maurice. And so, you know, how they handle the networks, whether we need access to their control network versus just the data acquisition piece, right? And so multiples. We've done things where we actually plug in right into their control network, you know, just to with the read access only to be able to view the tags coming from the PLCs and generate data in that way. In other places, we are not allowed to be in the control network, and I understand why, right? There's concerns about security. And the way we do it is we either connect on the existing sensors, you know, and we have basically a repeater, you know, to repeat the signal. Or in other places, we even have to install our own sensors, right? Because the customer doesn't want us to touch any of those sensors that are already in the field, because it might be from part of an OEM and warranty might be an issue. And so we installed additional sensors. So many ways to do it. And in terms of the applications, the software applications, we work with what the client has. If you have a, if you already have data flowing into your enterprise servers, you know, in terms of data, you know, like a SQL databases or big, a big, you know, big volume databases, you know, like, you know, you have a big data databases that are like Cassandra, right? We work within that as well, you know? And so we just add other components that make a, an industrial, you know, IoT solution real, right? So you're talking about, scalability is one of the biggest issues. So, you know, on the enterprise side, you know, making sure that you have a time series database that scales, sometimes doing maybe processing in memory databases, you know, queuing systems, you know, like MQTT, but sometimes you will have multiple MQTT servers, you know, because you have a lot of time, real-time data coming in. So you have something like a Kafka, you know, which is an orchestrator, you know, for queues. And then, on the other end, some rule engines to allow you to generate, you know, alerts and, you know, and generate tickets, you know, like for asset management and things of that nature, you know. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's
okay.
a lot of components that need to be used. And so some companies have a lot of these components, some mm-hmm. don't, you know. And so we come in and we use what they have and then add, after we do a gap analysis, we come up with here's a potential solution and here's maybe a target architecture. And sometimes, you know, the target architecture is very long term. So we do an multiple intermediate target architectures, you know, to get to that final one, you know. So
interesting. You know, Ian, we were kind of talking about the Jetsons, the old TV cartoon from many years ago. But I think about right now, you hear a lot of some of these cities talk about we want to be a smart city. And most of the things when they do an application, a lot of it has to do with carbon neutral and electric cars and things like that. I think it's a lot more than that. So
yeah.
I think there's so much more that when we talk about how we can actually, things are going to change in the future. When you look at the future right now, what are some of the trends that you are seeing and some of the events that you think that's going to partake in the industrial world over within the next decade? What do you think that's heading?
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, clearly, you know, the biggest game changer right now is artificial intelligence, right? And a lot of people, when you said those two words, are thinking ChatGPT, right? To me, it's, yeah, ChatGPT, there's no doubt, is, you know, it's been a groundbreaking application. There are so many other things out there, right? That are, you know, that is not related to, you know, large language models, you know, like ChatGPT. I think that there's a lot of applications that you can use large language models like ChatGPT to structure data and allow you to have a more intelligent query, or actually, I would say a dumber query that doesn't require a lot of knowledge to be able to extract data, right? It still requires some level of expertise. So to me, a lot of people say, you know, AI is displacing jobs. I don't see it that way. I see it, AI is making people who know already, right, about a subject matter, so SMEs, experts, more productive, right? Because you can ask if you ask the right questions to ChatGPT, you can get better answers, right? Than if you have broad questions. Like in our team, you know, we have some of the junior analysts that use some of that to help, you know, speed up some processes. And when I revise their work, it's like, oh, well, this is not exactly this way. Where do you get this? Well, I got it from, you know, ChatGPT or whatever are the ones that they're using. And so we got together and said, show me your prompts. And then it's like, by changing the prompts a little, we get a completely different response, right? And so, but you need somebody who knows that, is that answer correct or not, right? And so for that, you need expertise or you need some sort of knowledge, you know? And so I don't think it's going to displace. It's going to make more productive, right? It's kind of like the steam engine, right? It enabled productivity back, you know, a long time ago to you know, exponentially produce more, right? And so I think that's what AI is going to do, allow us to do that. So AI is the first thing. I think, you know, that when we talk about predictions, you know, and predictive, when I talk about AI, to me, that's part of the same, you know, in the same bucket of things. But this is with data. So how do you predict an outcome with more certainty, right? And having the ability to process large amounts of data, right? I think that's, it's been happening since, you know, early mid 2000s, has been growing in the, you know, 2010s. And now we're in a place where processing large volumes of data and big data is a lot simpler. And we need it, right, in order to be able to crunch these big models, right? I think that to me, when I look at the future, I see more productivity because of AI. I see more productivity because of big volume processing engines, you know, that are getting better at processing this amount of data. And also, you know, we're getting cloud computing became so ubiquitous now, right? It's like if you're not doing cloud, you're definitely what rock you've been living under, right? Because it's a huge thing. And so and clearly cybersecurity is a key part of the future, because, you know, the more we do, the more we realize that, especially because we're in the cloud, everything is out there, connected, interconnected. And if you don't have the right prevention methods and the right, you know, shields, you know, it all can come down, you know. And so, but to me, those are the key areas, right? You know, we talk about mobile computing, which has been already a revolution. I think for me in the industrial world is the edge computing, the ability to have small processors on the edge, mm-hmm. and be able to do localized machine learning, right? Because it would be very difficult to keep passing the amount of data that we want to pass from OT, right, the operational technology devices, into the cloud, right? So I think you're going to have to move some of these computational capabilities to the sites, right, on the edge, right? And I think that as processors keep growing, and when you're talking about the, you know, terabytes capabilities of, you know, or petabytes capabilities, some of these processors, you're talking about NVIDIA, you know, and NVIDIA and all those small computing devices, you know. It's funny because NVIDIA is known for their, you know, for their, you know, usually in the past, you know, for the visual display cards and the GPUs. But nowadays, they even make the small industrial computing devices that are for the edge, and they're super powerful. I mean, the amount of computational power that they have is incredible, you know, and then now you can have that on the edge. You know, 5 years ago, you couldn't, you know, so now you can, you know. I mean, you could, but it would have been a huge machine, right? Yeah, so.
I agree with you, and I was thinking about that, and I like how you made that comment to say that it's going to create more jobs. There's going to be more jobs in that particular area because that's the direction that we're heading, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a you spot on with that, with talking about the edge computing and how we're actually migrating there. And we're getting there pretty quick, you know? So it's going to happen pretty fast there. So This is great. So, Ian, this has been really enlightening. You gave us a really deep dive into IoT here. We talked a little bit about the future. And that's the kind of conversation I want to have. I think that this is exciting. And to me, it's just like it's happening like in color, you know, like you go from black and white from Wizard of Oz, and all of a sudden everything's in color because it's moving really, really fast here. And you got to stay up and keep up with it. And I think that the people that eventually people, like you said, unless you're living on a rock, you will eventually come on. The question is, you don't want to get too far behind if you get too far behind, you're going to get left behind.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
This has been a lot of opportunities. I can see like data scientists and all kind of analytics and people that are really, really good with algorithms. It's going to be a really great future. And as we migrate more and more towards that area.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, Maurice. Appreciate it.
I really appreciate it. This has been a very, very good intellectual conversation here, Ian. I'm really happy to have that. So
as you just heard,
Ian Uriate, a really great conversation.
Thank
here.
You for being.
He's the founder thank you for joining CEO our podcast today.
And Ian, I don't know if you want to put more your website up in the future here.
So we want to take our special guest, Ian Uriate.
Thank you, timbergrove.com. And we'll catch you on the next one. There's a blog there as well, and we try to keep somehow the blog updated with some, you know, some of the things that we're finding in the field and some of the challenges that we find. So, you know, for those of you who are following industrial IoT, machine learning, and, you know, and industrial settings, probably a few of our blog posts will be a good read for you. So, yeah, timbergrove.com. Yeah, thank you.
You got it. I definitely try to send some business your way. This has been very good. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Maurice. Same here.
All right. Talking with you. Likewise, guys, you just heard it. We had a really great conversation here, and we want to thank you for joining our podcast today. And we have plenty more coming up in the future here. So we want to thank our special guest, Ian Uriarte with Timber Grove, and we'll catch you on the next one. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from your host, connect with Maurice on LinkedIn at Maurice Hamilton. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.